Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte. This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles, just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Black Label presents Heavy Montreal, the heaviest festival in Canada. Back for a 10th edition. 2 days of rock and metal. July 27th and 28th, outdoors at Parc Jean Drapeau. Witness Slayer perform their last show in Quebec ever. Performances by Ghost, Godsmack, Evanescence, Slash, Anthrax, Steel Panther, Killswitch Engage, and many more. 40 bands playing 4 stages on a festival site that you have to see to believe. Festival passes are on sale now. Visit HeavyMontreal.com. Produced by Avenco.
Welcome to another edition of the Talking Metal Podcast, home of all things hard rock and heavy metal. I'm Mark Striegel, host and producer of this show since 2005. Now, let's get things started with the Talking Metal theme song, written by Rob Halford, Metal Mike, and Roy Z.
Hey, I hope everyone's having a great afternoon, a great evening, a great middle of the night, a great morning, a great whatever it happens to be when you're listening to this episode of the podcast. It's another great episode. I feel like we're really on a roll here with some fantastic episodes. And this one, I have to give a special shout out to Steven Saylor, one of our dear patrons on Patreon. He is the producer of this episode with me, I guess a co-producer. Steven, thank you for hooking this up with the great Lance King. I cannot believe how much I've come to really love this guy's music over the course of the past year since Steven has introduced me to him. And a lot of you guys probably have known him for a lot longer than that because he's been around for a long time. He's been doing his thing. And we're really going to dive into music from all eras of his career today on this episode, which, again, has been co-produced by Steven Saylor. He is the guy responsible for picking out most of the music that's going to be on this episode. He helped me with the interview questions, that is. So, yeah, without further ado, I'm really just going to let Lance's music ring out and speak to us on this episode, and also let Lance himself speak to us. So let's do this right now. This is Higher Than the Sun off the Perfect Balance record by Balance of Power, going way back to 2001, right here on Talking Metal. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
Perfect Balance by Balance of Power featuring Lance King. He's our guest on today's episode. I tell you what, let's get into some new Lance King right now. This is off the Reprogram album, and it's called Limitless, and it will be followed by my interview, mine and Stephen Saylor's interview, since he helped with the questions, with Lance King. Here we go. Limitless off of Reprogram by Lance King. Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and calling in once again, a pleasure to speak with this guy for a second time, Lance King. Lance, how are you?
I am doing fantastic, Mark. How are you?
I am great, because I've been, for the last like 3 days, listening to the new record, which is about to drop, I still call them records, new album, Reprogram. Man, fantastic work on this, Lance. You really, really did such a great job, from the songs to the message to the execution, the musicianships. I mean, it's all there. Really great stuff.
I'm glad you're enjoying it. Yeah, I feel pretty good about it. It's one of those records that's very personal to me, as far as, you know, the songs go, and I kind of lived it, and so I'm living it through the song.
Right on.
They're very real to me.
Well, I want to get into that, what, you know, the lyrics and the messages behind the songs. But first, I just want to mention that the musicianship is just outstanding. Who's playing with you on this? Like guitarists and drummers, and the keyboard work is great.
Yeah, keyboard work is a combination of people. Each of the guitar play with all are multi-instrumentalists. So a lot of times I'll play keys or they'll play keys or, you know, even solos from one guy, Fred, who comes in, Fred Colombo from Spirit Universe Experience. He's playing keys as well, and he does some really ornate solos. The rest of us are not such soloists, but Fred really lays it down. So
right.
Really cool.
Yeah.
So we got guitar players abundant. I've got Marcus Sigfridson from Darkwater, who just released a brand new album that is extremely good as well. Kim Olson from Anubis Gate. I wrote a couple songs with him.
Cool.
Did songs on my first solo album with both of those guys. But got two new guys that I'm writing with. And one of them is Rich Hinks from Annihilator and Aeon Zen. And that brought a really new flavor to everything that I really like. It's like a metaled up 75. Matt Hodson from town here that I signed a band a few years back called Chaos Frame. And, hugely unnoticed talent in my backyard. So I'm like, the album, the Chaos Frame thing didn't do anything. Nobody really took note of it, but it was a fantastic album. And I'm like, hey, want to write some songs together and we'll show people what you're capable of. And he said, yeah, let's do it. So wrote three songs with him as well on it. And Matt's very talented. So I'm kind of excited. And I've got some other players, kind of spiced throughout, like Matthias DeClunde is on like a solo on one track, different things like that, little surprises. So it's fun.
Very cool. And again, the album.
Rich played bass on the whole album, and Morton Gade from Pyramaze played drums on it too. Morton did a fantastic job, and as did Rich. Rich was co-writing, but he also played bass on pretty much the whole album.
And what is the songwriting process like? You mentioned that there are people writing the songs with you. They submit riffs to you, chord progressions, or do you have melodies that you send over to them?
It kind of varies, because that I like working with guitar players that are songwriters. A lot of times what happens is they'll send me a pretty finished music bed of ideas, and sometimes it'll need to be rearranged. Sometimes it'll need things here and there. Maybe it won't have a chorus section or whatever, but then we'll develop, that part, and then I'll just write my parts, the melody and the words and the harmonies and such. And then, so we'll kind of develop the song structure together. But they'll have a pretty good start. And there were a couple of tracks where I wrote ideas down musically, sent them out to other people, and I'm like, so what do you think? Like, needs to be faster. I'm like, well, I can't play it faster. You can.
Right.
I'm not what I call a great player, and I like playing with great players, and I can get my point across musically with instruments, but I'm much better at so
right.
It's kind of the way we do it. It's just kind of it's whatever works. Like in one of the songs, actually, I'd written the title track. I'd written with Dean Wells from Terramaze in 2014. And then a bunch of life dramas happened that just pushed everything back, my record. Don't really want to get into all of that, but a lot of family drama, major health issues with my mom, stepmother, and my wife. And,
oh, man.
So lots of stuff, and it took many years to get back to writing. I actually almost died because
I
had triple pulmonary embolism after a routine knee scope surgery that gave me a blood clot in my leg. Didn't know what was going on with it until it was too late.
Oh, my God.
And then I was rushed into the hospital in the ER.
Wow.
So anyway, after that, I got motivated and I came back and just wanted to start writing and kind of refine my life's passion and redefine where I was going, because, I I hadn't been putting out music for a while, as you know, and gotten sidetracked. And it's, there was just too much drama, and I needed that passion back in my life. And, you know, because of all the other stuff, it had taken me away from Nightmare Records quite a bit, so I wasn't able to keep, you know, that going as strongly as I would have liked. And then I'm like, well, you know what? I don't really miss that so much. I miss making music.
Right, right.
So,
yeah.
So then started working on it, and I forgot the point of your question. Could you repeat it again so I could get...
Well, I think we started just talking about the songwriting and you know, I mean, I was curious about the message behind the behind the lyrics and the album in general, and it sounds like you went through a lot, and I'm guessing
most
some of that
yeah.
played into the
exactly.
the message of the album.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, over the course of the last 8 years, a lot of family dramas that I've been being away from what I really love doing, making music, it all sort of affected my center and my balance in life a lot. So I was pretty unhappy, and trying to refocus and find, you know, my Zen zone again and you know, do what I really enjoy doing and, you know, being happy, which we all strive for, I guess, and sometimes fail at miserably. And I'd read a book during the course of that that was called The Four Agreements, and it was a pretty short, easy read, 160 pages or so. And it was what the guy called Toltec wisdom, which is, I guess, a philosophical belief system of the Aztecs. And
okay.
It was kind of interesting. So it was, well, it was not just kind of interesting. It was hugely interesting. Of course, he was bringing it to the current day metaphors and things so that you could understand it a lot better. And it was written really, really simply. So, I mean, it impacted me a lot because it changed my perceptions of all the crap I was going through and helped me reframe my life differently. So a lot of that was, you know, coming to the realization that we're all kind of domesticated from a young age. That leaves us living by a set of rules that we haven't really chosen ourselves. You know, what people have said to us is, you know, a reflection of them, not us, and that we take those things, you know, too literally. And as we're growing up, we're learning to please all the time from our parents. And we're not really focusing on what pleases us so much. We're just fearful of pleasing other people. And we take all that stuff far too seriously, you know, because when other people are dealing with their own stuff, you know, and they say something to you, you tend to take it too personally, but it's not really a reflection on you. It's a reflection on them and those kinds of things, you know. So,
right.
Yeah, you kind of have to reprogram yourself to find your passions in life. And this book gave me, you know, basic rules to do that, you know, simple, basic four rules, you know. And let me see if I remember them.
and they worked for you. When you started doing the rules, you felt a change in your mental state and where you are?
Yeah. I mean, and the rules are really simple. Like rule number one, be impeccable with your word, you know, don't say things that you don't really mean and, you know, be completely honest with yourself and others. And two, don't take anything personally, you know, because that's a reflection of other people, not you. And that one's really hard if you don't really know who you are. You know what I mean? So you have to kind of identify who you are before you can not take anything personally. But, and then number three is don't make assumptions of what other people mean and, or other situations. And number four is just always do your best.
Right.
And then
makes sense.
You won't have to feel guilty about what you've done, and you won't have to be fearful of what is in or have anxieties about the future. You know?
Okay.
So it's just kind of, it's really simple, but it's in depth as well, you know, because it's all based on all these little things, you know, that we've kind of got in our subconscious from, you know, 20 years of programming from society and, you know, parents, peers, teachers, religions, you know, the news,
right,
all that sort of thing.
Which plays right into the lyrics, you know, like limitless.
Right. Oh, yeah.
I am limitless. You are limitless. The writer of my own destiny, which is interesting because, you know, I hear what you're saying and you are the writer of your own destiny, but in some ways you aren't because of everything that's been, you know,
projected
on you. So how, I mean,
and we have these societies, I don't know, rules, I guess. And our fear of rejection for not following them or quite, you know, and, you know, when you question them, people look down their nose at you and things like that, you know? So, yeah, it's, yeah. I guess I've always kind of been a rebel and,
right,
you know, buck the system at pretty much every point and question everything. It's just in my nature. So it fit really well with my personality and my worldview.
Right on, right on.
You know,
and you mentioned the news media and programming we get from that. Just curious, the song Wide Open, is that maybe what that song is hinting at or about?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, it's become, I don't know, I think that people do not question enough. They just accept what they hear. They don't really think too much about it. We become a headline society. You read a headline or you hear a headline and you don't really care about the details of the story. You don't do any further investigation. That just is what it is. You know what I mean? And they accept everything as truth that they hear. And it could be, you know, something they heard from, you know, a friend at the water cooler, or it could be what they heard on TV or even saw in a movie, or these days what they read on Facebook or, you know, see on YouTube, which can be pretty out there as well. You know, I mean, there's a lot of rabbit holes out there that are pretty deep and dark and you can get sucked into them pretty easily.
Yeah. And you know, what's interesting about that? I mean, too, it's like the politics, for example, it seems like we're being programmed by the different news outlets that we must conform to one way or the other. And it's like, for me, like, I hear stuff on the left that I like, and sometimes I hear stuff on the right that I like, but yet I don't really want to identify with either one of those extremes. But yet I feel like so many people just hear what they're told on TV or on Facebook, and they feel like, well, this is the side I'm on, when, you know.
Right. And that was a big part of that song as well. I mean, that particular song is pretty, I guess, take a look at the political agenda kind of thing. Wide Open. Be more open because you are, you know, being fed certain guidelines to buy into. And I like to think of myself more of a centrist that way. Although, you know, a lot of people would think I'm conservative. I was brought up completely in a liberal family. And, you
right.
know, while I do have some conservative ideals, and I do have some liberal ones as well.
Sure.
But I'm, you know, I'm someone who learned a really good work ethic and somebody who learned, even in a liberal family, to be very conservative with my spending and careful with that kind of thing. So, you know, I'm pretty much, I guess, a libertarian. You know, I'm somewhere in the middle, and
right.
I don't accept either the, you know, each one of them thinks of themselves as the light side and the other is the dark side. And I don't accept either one.
Right.
I'm in the middle.
Yeah. Right on. I'm with you on
yeah.
that. And, you know,
yeah.
Kind of to circle back to the record reprogram, it's coming out, March 29th, which by the time we get this posted, will probably be about a week away. Is that right? March 29th?
Yeah. Yep. March 29th.
And that'll be available. I see you can pre-order it on iTunes now. I'm sure it'll be on Amazon. And
it's available right now. You can actually pre-order it and get a couple of gratis tracks immediately, you know, from iTunes or Amazon. And you can stream a couple of tracks right now on pretty much all the streaming sites and Spotify. And I'm probably going to be releasing another one by the time that this airs, so there might be even more tracks available to pre-order and get right away and check it out or stream it, see if you like it, and then Go ahead.
Oh, any plans for a vinyl edition of Reprogram?
Yeah. Right now, we'll see how well it does, you know, and what people's response is, and then we'll go from there. You know, vinyl's an expensive proposition, so we'll see if I have fans that are interested in vinyl, and then we'll go from there.
Right on.
Certainly on the table. Right.
And so are you doing, like, what are you doing to promote the record? Do you have a publicist you're working with, or is it more just word of mouth stuff and talking to people like me?
I've been working on it for a long time, for about a year, as far as promoting the idea. And I started last June with a crowdfunding. So I got the word out pretty far through my networks and social media and done several press releases, but I did not have a pro publicist working it. And I am going to have one do a blast here with the new release of the new video coming up next week. But that's about it. You know, it's just been word of mouth pretty much.
So to
underground, I'm completely independent now. I went to this is the first time in a really long time that I haven't had another label outside of my own, pushing the album in another territory of the world.
Right.
So that's reverting back to that is kind of refreshing in some ways because, there's no rules. I can do whatever I want. I can try whatever I want. I'm not stepping on any toes,
Right.
And I can make more money, maybe. We'll see.
Cool.
But
well,
again, yeah, the dollar, the promotional dollar is definitely less on this one as far as getting word out. So,
word of mouth is major, obviously. So we encourage all the listeners of this podcast, the Talking Metal listeners, to put it on your social media, tell your friends, let people know that Lance King has a great new record out called Reprogram, or it's about to come out. And it's a concept record, right? So, and this is something that you've done a lot in the
loosely,
past.
I'd say loosely? It's a loosely conceptual album. It's just sort of my dealing with life, and then what came out sort of reflected, the book, The Four Agreements, and how I sort of processed things. And so I'm like, if I take the premise of that and look at how it applies to the songs, it seems to fit. So, it's loosely a conceptual album in that way. But I wouldn't be hardcore about calling it a concept album. It's just seems to work really well together, all the songs.
Gotcha. What about some of your older
right
records?
Right now, what's that?
I was going to say, what about some of your previous records, like Book of Secrets? Would
I've
you
done
that?
A lot of concept albums. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. And I think some of them were actually, trying to be concept albums that weren't really concept albums, but, as well. And the bands wanted to use that as a marketing strategy because that we'd all, really appreciated as some concept albums in the past, and namely, Mind Crime comes to mind.
Right.
That was a big one for many people, and Balance of Power. And then, Michael wrote quite a concept album for Pyramaze and Legend of the Bone Carver. And that one was really, it was more of a story, that just kind of went throughout the whole album. So it was pretty cool how that, people seem to really enjoy that. Now I'd say that one's truly a concept album.
Pyramaze.
What's that?
Pyramaze you're talking about. Yeah. And yeah, what did you work with? Jacob Hansen on that? Any memories of working with him as a producer that you could share?
Yeah. Before my time with Pyramaze, I hadn't worked with Jacob. And then Jacob sent me all the tracks, direct from the studio when the band accepted me into their ranks, and I was really amazed at the tracks, how great they sounded pre-mixed when I got them. And I'm like, geez, who is this guy? You know, the drums sounded like they were, actually, I thought they were programmed until I heard the sticks fall at the end of the track. And I'm like, wow, holy mackerel, this guy's good.
You know? Right.
So I've worked with him since, you know, because he has got such golden ears when it comes to mix. It's fantastic. So I really, really dig his mix. So he makes my first record as well, the solo album. And yeah, I have no plans to move and do anything differently in the future, because we got a really good rapport and I just really enjoy the end product.
Cool. And you also worked with Dave Elveson of Megadeth fame in the past. Can you talk a little bit about that? What he worked on with you, and maybe any memories you have working with him?
Sure. Yeah, I was in Dallas Power at the time, and I'd mixed a record. Was it Dallas Power? Yeah. It was like the second Balance of Power album that I did, when some local friends at Orphan Studios had told David about me, and we're both Minnesotans, so he reached out to me when he had a project that he was working on, and he needed a singer, and he ended up suggesting that I mixed the album, because it was kind of coming into a thing. Avian started out as just a recording project, not like a serious one. David's just like, hey, this guy, you know, he's paying me to play on it.
Right.
Would you like to sing on it, make some money? And I'm like, sure, yeah, sounds good. And we did that. And he's like, well, you know, this is starting to turn into something.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe we should release it. I'm like, yeah. Yeah, okay. It's like, I think you should mix it. I'm like, okay, I'll mix it. And it mixed it kind of raw. It was a lot of work, because we had David's drummer from F5. And I'll just say this kindly, his meter is not good.
Right.
I needed to edit all of the drums, and that was a lot of labor.
He wasn't playing to a click? Or he was, and it was still off.
Well, if he was, he just, you know, I think what it was is that when it was recorded, it was done sessionally and like spotty, so that there were like a couple of tracks recorded at the time, and they were kind of more, you know, thinking it was just demoing, you weren't taking it that seriously or whatever. But the tracks that I got to work with were not awesome. And you know, took a lot of mixing and a lot of editing to get them to be awesome. And then of course they didn't have much feel, because I'm not a drummer, I'm a singer. So a drummer's here and they're like, is that a drum machine? Like,
right.
There's not really any groove to it. It's just,
oh,
like,
wow.
The beat.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's singer groove.
Yeah. Right. I got you.
I don't get drummer groove. I just know that, you know, to a click, this sounds good.
Right on.
But cool. Yeah, it was fun. So the Avian album came out, and we managed to get it out in Japan and Europe, and I released it here in the States. And
from the depths of time, right?
So that's what I did with David Ellison of Megadeth.
Yeah, cool. And mm-hmm. Wanted to mention your coffee. You have your own brand of coffee, Awakenings, the Dark Roast. what got you involved with that? Was that an Elveson thing? Because doesn't he do coffee?
Yeah, he does. He started after me. I can say that. I did it first.
Okay. If anything, you influenced him.
His is probably doing better than mine. I have a sister-in-law who had a coffee shop, and she had a roaster, and she's like, hey, you know, have you ever thought about branding your own coffee? And I'm like, well, because I'm a coffee nerd, and she knew I appreciated good coffee, and I'm like, well, I'd consider that, you know, what are you thinking? And she gave me some Guatemalan beans that she just roasted, and I'm like, these are awesome, you know, let's do that. And so I put out a coffee and take it to Prague Power every year and sell about 50 pounds of it there, and sell, you know, through the course of the year, another 50 or so. It's not a big money maker for me, but it's fun.
Right on. Cool. And random question, going back to, I guess it was like 92 when you covered Barracuda by Heart. Just wanted to ask you how that all came about. Were you a big Heart fan? Why did you choose that song to cover back in those times? If you remember, it was a long time ago.
Yeah, I was a big Heart fan in the late 70s. And, you know, I had gone and saw them live, and they just freaking blew doors. They were so good. And I saw them outside, so we didn't have any acoustics to contend with. And it was just like this wall of sound. They were so great. So I was playing a cover band at the time. And we worked into playing and writing originals during the days in the clubs because we were playing 4 or 5 nights a week. So we'd have nothing to do during the day. So we'd go into the clubs and we'd start writing. And we wrote an album and two albums actually that way, and would just go in and record 2 or 3 songs at the end of every month that we'd written throughout the course of the month and kind of do it on our budget. And guys thought we should redo Barracuda because we did it live and people
right on.
Thought it was great. It was one of those things that, you know, people noted and us for was that. And we did Queensryche really well, and we did Rush really well. And
sure.
People thought those were all really cool things that we did. So
nice.
So we recorded one of the tracks, and it was
turned out great.
We didn't get crazy with covers, but yeah, that one was one that everybody remarked on because I don't know. I guess I just because I have the range to pull it off.
When you think back on the music that you listen to throughout your life, is there one specific album, let's say album, not band, that jumps to the top of the pile as a really life-altering piece of art, a life-altering album in your life?
There are various ones at different parts of my life. I'd say early on, my dad used to play Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon one,
right.
And that was an early one. Early teens, 2112 by Rush, Leftover Tour by Kansas, Boston, Don't Look Back. You
sure.
know, those kinds of things are just like huge. And, you know, Foreigner, Head Games. Wow, what a great album. Queen. Oh, Queen was huge. Huge, huge, huge. I first found the cassette of theirs that I was engaged with, which was called All That Jazz. And then when We Are the Champions came out, I was just like, oh my God, this is awesome.
Yeah.
And then, you know, things like when I first heard Queensryche's Mind Crime, I was like, oh my God, what's this?
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
This is awesome. Dream Theater's Images and Words, another one. It's just like, wow, this is great. And so, yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of things along the way that are good, but those albums like really stand out as influencing and changing, you know, upping the game, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
You know, they were setting the bar.
Right. Right. Awesome.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, go ahead.
Let's not forget AC/DC's Back in Black, okay? Because that was like,
yeah.
Holy crap.
Right on. Right on. Yeah. Awesome stuff, Lance. And the new album, again, is just incredible. Reprogram. It is out March 29th, right? March 29th. Does that sound right?
March 29th.
Yeah.
Yes.
Cool. Pre-order it now on iTunes. I know you can listen to a couple of the tracks are up already, right? Limitless is up and one other one, right? Is it Pointing Fingers? I'm trying to remember.
Pointing Fingers.
Yeah.
Limitless and Pointing Fingers are up, and you can get those on Amazon as well and get a couple of those tracks early so you can play them wherever you like. And then, you know, CD will show up later. Or if you buy a pre-order download, then that'll show up on the release date.
Cool.
And stream the tracks and keep your eyes peeled. We're releasing a new video for Pointing Fingers. It's coming out next week. So probably will be out by the time this airs.
Yeah. I'm going to hopefully have this
find
up next Tuesday. Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
Yeah, well, that's about the time that this the video will be coming out, I think.
All right, excellent.
Talking to Adrenaline PR about that right now. We're going to get something set up for a premiere.
Perfect. Good stuff. And yeah, as always, great talking with you, Lance, and we wish you the best of luck, and we will be promoting and supporting the new release reprogram here on Talking Metal.
Thank you so much, Mark. Crank it up.
And while you're on the line, I wanted to give a big shout out to Steven, who helped hook this whole interview up, and he's a big fan of yours.
Yeah.
And he's really turned me on to your music, and I'm glad he has, because you got some great stuff.
Yeah.
Steven Saylor.
Steven. Yeah. Steven's been writing back and forth with me for quite a bit over the last year about this, and been trying to get hook me up with all kinds of little things. So thanks, Steve.
Yeah, thank you, Steven. Cool. And thank you, Lance. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Mark.
Okay.
Great talking to you.
Good talking to you. Have a good afternoon.
You too. Bye.
A little new music off of Reprogram right there. Okay, well, let's keep the music going. This is Blinding Force off of From the Depths of Time, going back to 2005. And yeah, let's check it out right now on Talking Metal.
Bells ringing as the sun begins to drown in the sea.
Cool. We are really, really experiencing a good mix of Lance King's music today, from new to old, here on Talking Metal. Thanks to Steven Saylor for hooking up this episode. And this is the cover we were talking about in the interview earlier. Here we go. Barracuda, Lance King on the vocals there from 1992. We are going to wrap today's episode up with Melancholy Beast off of Melancholy Beast by Pyramaze, going back to 2004. And again, just be sure to pick up Lance's new record, Reprogram. And Lance, you're always welcome back here on Talking Metal, so again, the best of luck to you. Guys, you can support this podcast with a PayPal donation. It's my email is what's attached to my PayPal, striegelmark@gmail.com. Join me on Patreon for all the exclusives. You get a bonus podcast every week on Patreon. Can you believe that? And you get videos and shirts and merchandise and all sorts of fun stuff. So join me on Patreon. And what else? You can use our Amazon links. I appreciate when you do that, guys, and you guys are great with that. So thank you for continuing to use our Amazon links. The way you do that is you just go to talkingmetal.com or talkingrock.net, click the Amazon links that you'll find there. And, you know, depending on what country you live in, that depends on what links you use. You can figure it out, I'm sure. It doesn't seem like anyone outside of the U.S. is really using our Amazon links anyways, which is unfortunate, but I do appreciate the U.S. support because it's good. It's good. You guys are awesome with that. And you can buy a hoodie. They're for sale for $60. And I know that's expensive, but they did cost me a bunch of money to make the hoodies. And, you know, it just view it as a support of the podcast, okay? I could even work a two-for-one deal with you. If you want a hoodie and a t-shirt, email me at mark@talkingmetal.com. We can work out a deal, okay? All right, dudes, that's going to do it. Big thanks to Lance King. And yeah, like I said earlier, here's a little more music by Pyramaze from 2004. This is Melancholy Beast to take us out. All right, guys.